You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and we are glad you're joining us this fine Wednesday. Art Factor, my producer, sitting there on the other side of the glass. How you doing, Art?
I'm doing well, Steve.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. How did your comedy show go last? You had one last week, right?
I was there on Friday.
And were you sensational?
Was I? Yeah, of course I was sensational.
Did you get a standing O?
I didn't. Although some people stood up. I think they stood up to leave. I don't, does that count as an ovation?
The laughter you hear. Paul DeMera is also joining us. How are you doing, Paul?
Very good. Thank you, Steve.
I think we got to go out and we got to heckle Art one night at
yeah,
the Comedy
we do.
Club.
You're right.
When's your next gig, Art?
When is my next gig? I'll let you know before the end of the show.
Okay.
A tease is what they call it in the radio biz.
Well, let's tease people with what's on this week's show. We've got Linda L. Richards joining us in a little while. Linda is she's the editor of January Magazine, a website about books and authors. They're doing a publishing seminar. It's for the Vancouver listeners, for people in Vancouver area, but they're doing a publishing seminar to teach people how to. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
I couldn't get past chapter one.
Why not? What about you, Paul? You into writing?
You know, maybe. I think structurally, I don't have the expertise, but I certainly have lots of good ideas. So
yeah. I think that the world's full of good ideas. Writers have a special
knack.
A thing, yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, they can spell. And then it goes beyond that. And Art being raised in going to Catholic school, as did I know that probably spelling isn't high on his list of skills. Am I correct?
We live in a world of iPhones and autocorrect.
Exactly.
Who needs to spell anymore? Who needs to know how to spell?
Yeah, well, you do. Okay. And so do I. We also are going to be continuing to celebrate Photo Month. This month is Photo Month, and we're going to be talking about some of the courses and stuff that they're doing at London Drugs. And, we're also going to be looking at, I've forgotten. What's Rick talking about? Rick Yeager is going to be talking about, he's talking about photo apps on the
photo
iPhone.
Apps
so,
good,
yeah,
right?
Photo apps following, good. We're going to be following that theme, the whole theme of photo apps. So it's going to be lots on photography coming up a little bit later in the show. Now, all three in here, I think all have iPhones. And Apple has released a new version of the operating system. And so I'm wondering whether or not I want to upgrade. So, Paul, you've been doing some research.
I did.
Is it just a normal upgrade or is there new features?
No, I didn't see any new features. They specifically talk about the fact that they're fixing a few little bugs like camera issues. Speaking of pictures, HDR, you know, high definition recording.
What's this? This is 5.1?
5.1.1.
5.1.1.
Yeah, they say improves reliability of using the HDR function, which is part of the photography thing, right, when you're using the camera.
The
high
HDR, definition. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That photography is cool. Actually, I'm going to be posting
high dynamic
a
range.
Photograph on the website today of a picture that I saw a startling photo of the sunrise.
Yeah.
I wrote to the guy. It was on Facebook. I wrote to the guy. I said, can I use that photo? Because it was an HDR image. And, man, is that ever... That is spectacular.
It makes you more like film, right? That's what it does. It gives you that expanded range.
I think it gives
you
better than film.
Actually, it does because there's less noise.
Yeah.
On a digital camera today. And, I mean, you always... The best camera you have is the one with you, which, of course, is your iPhone, right? Because you always have that with you.
So they're improving the HDR capabilities.
Yeah. They're addressing some bugs that prevent it from switching between 2 and 3G. So depending on which network you're on and which device, which SIM card, all that stuff, I guess it tidies up some of the radio stuff that they felt were not working the way it's supposed
okay.
to.
Yeah.
Bugs in AirPlay, that's the video playback, which is really cool to be able to transmit the video to your Apple TV. Improve reliability.
AirPlay is wonderful.
It's better than wonderful. It's magical, actually.
It's magic.
You push a button and it just goes to your TV set,
it's
right?
Just magic.
Reliability for syncing Safari bookmarks and fixes an issue where unable to purchase. Well, that's not good, right? Could be deflate after a successful purchase. So just a bunch of little software things. And this stuff is very common for all operating systems. It's certainly not exclusive to Apple or Android or anybody for that matter.
Typically speaking, how long does it take to do this upgrade?
I did it this afternoon myself. One very important point, at least with the Apple device, For my iPad 3, or new iPad, I guess is what you really call it, I had to have it hooked up to Wi-Fi. It didn't want to do it over the 3G connection. Mm-hmm. It wanted to be on Wi-Fi.
Now, is this one of the ones that wants you plugged into power as well?
You need to have enough juice in the device to make it work. So if you're below, I think it's 20%, it will tell you to plug it in because it's a fairly long download. And the neat thing, though, is you don't have to plug it into iTunes. I just had it sitting on my desk, pushed the button, came back maybe 20 minutes later, and it was good to go.
Okay.
Simple.
So you've done your iPad?
Yeah, iPhone later tonight. I didn't want to do both at the same time.
Art, you going to upgrade later?
I guess so. It sounds fantastic. These are issues I've never had before. There are so many things on this phone that...
You know, that's the funny thing about upgrading and stuff like that. It often... If you've been using the device, seldom are the issues that you've had.
Yes.
And then so often it creates new issues.
Well, that's why I always suggest to people to wait a day or two, just to keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
And if there is a problem, most people will discover, like the eager beavers like me who go in there and probably do it on day one, will find stuff. And what happens is it gets put on the blogs pretty quickly. Oh, don't upgrade because this breaks.
Yeah.
And there is a thing that they mentioned that there was a problem with exchange synchronization with this. So that potentially could be a problem for some folks as well.
It's funny. You know, I've started doing a couple of new things on the website. If people drop by the website, they'll see we've got some new videos that we're putting up. And I'm putting up these little...
they're awesome.
So far, thank you.
You're welcome.
I've just been putting up these little how-to videos. And I've got one up on Rogers One Number. And I've got one up on Twitter for absolute beginners. And some tips on using Dropbox and stuff. And I haven't really put a lot of production value into them yet. I just wanted to see if people like them. And it looks like they're going to like them. So I'm going to start increasing the quality of them. But I record them on my Mac at home using an application called ScreenFlow. And since they've been successful and people like them, I've decided that I'm going to do a nice little opening for it and do add some extra little elements to it. So I installed a copy of Adobe Premiere Elements to do a little extra video editing just on an opening. After I installed it, I went back to record a ScreenFlow document, and my audio sounded crazy. I sounded like I was Alvin and the Chipmunks. and so I thought, what have I done wrong? And so I'm going through, and I restart the computer, and I uninstall and reinstall ScreenFlow, and I can't figure out. And then I actually called David Hathaway, a friend of ours who's been on the show, one of my technical go-to guys, and I start talking to him on Skype, and he goes, "Your voice sounds funny." It's not the application. He says,
"Something
you sound
else.
Like Alvin and the Chipmunks." And we discovered that we actually had to go, for some reason, Adobe Premiere reset the sampling rate of the audio. And I had to dive way down into the system tools to find this audio MIDI control thing and reset the sampling rate from 48 kilohertz to 44 kilohertz or something like this. I never would have found this.
You know, it's sad to say things should be simple, but sometimes they aren't. You jump from CD sampling, by the way, to DVD sampling. That's the difference. That's what I did.
Well,
try to find it, though.
Smack me with a salmon. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I bet you most folks wouldn't find it either.
You could have just created a new character, though.
That's right.
Well, you could have been, kids. Think of the opportunities you had.
I thought it was speeding up the video is the problem. I thought it was speeding up because I couldn't tell if I was talking faster. I just And so I actually went in and I actually manually slowed the video down and it stayed at the same pitch. And I didn't sound like Alvin the Chipmunks. I sounded prepubescent.
And I just don't think that's way younger.
You found the fountain of youth.
There you go.
Yeah, for my voice and nothing else. I still look the same.
It's a start.
Yeah, I guess so. But here we've got tools that make things so simple. This ScreenFlow just makes it so easy to produce those little webcasts. I mean, I can capture screens, I can shoot a little video, I can put them together in an hour type time frame.
And you know what? Quick and easy. It'll be interesting to hear what people have to say. I watched the ones you'd produced, and I thought they were great. Nice and simple, easy to understand, and I think that's what people are looking for, just a little guidance, right?
They
don't need anything mega fancy. They just want to learn how to do it real quick, and I think they're great, Steve. So.
Well, the funny thing is the content that we're producing on them, not the funny thing, but the irony is the content that we're producing on them, the demos are the sorts of things that we used to do on the TV show.
Right.
And that's kind of what I'm trying to get back to, because people have been asking for, you know, that kind of demo
show and tell stuff.
Which we really can't do on radio, so it gives me an opportunity to that. And I don't really like writing blogs and writing out the stuff because it's quite an arduous task to write that much. So, but here I'm producing the stuff that we have to set up cameras all over the place and spend thousands of dollars in the studio to do and be rehearsed. And now I'm doing it like in an hour. Boom, 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 boom. I zoom in on the screen where we used to have two cameras and these LCD monitors and a camera guy going in to zoom in and out on the menus.
A lot of production work to get it done.
And using the software, it's just zip, 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 zip. and
welcome to the new world.
You're done. Right? And the thing will even publish it straight to YouTube for me. I don't even have to save it on my hard drive and then upload it. It clicks on publish to YouTube. You put in your keywords, and then 20 minutes later, you look on YouTube, and there's your video, and people have already watched it. It's pretty spectacular. And
these can all be found at dottotech.com.
Huh? That would be correct. Nice.
There you go, eh?
You know what? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking books with Linda L. Richards.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
One of the things that the online world has changed for all of us is we have become writers. We all have blogs. We all write so much more, so much so that some of us might consider that we might want to publish. That is a thought. Joining me online now, Linda Richards. Linda is the editor of January Magazine, a very popular website, which is about books and authors. And she is hosting, with several others, a seminar, Publish and Market and Publicize Your Book, coming up in Vancouver. How are you doing, Linda?
I'm doing great. Nice to be here, Steve.
Now, you're telling me that we actually have worked together before.
Yes, you had me on your show in 1995, when I was publicizing my very own first book.
Well, which book was that?
It was and don't read it, because it reads like my grandmother wrote it now. It's so long ago. The Canadian Business Guide to Using the Internet.
The Canadian Business Guide to Using the Internet. Were you recommending people publish websites at that time?
I was. I feel like I invented the internet, right? Because nobody was talking about the web in 95.
Well, in 95, you may have. Now, I'm wondering what show this was. Was this the one that in a little studio that we did, the Dotto on Data show that we did in the little studio?
I had really cool chairs.
Oh, we had really cool. Oh, were you in the studio, in the cafe?
I guess so. It had cool chairs. Remember that.
Okay. Well, you remember more of it than I do. I did a couple of hundred of those shows, so I tend to forget. Okay, but tell me about this seminar that you folks are doing. It's in the Vancouver area, first of all, May 26th at the BCIT downtown campus.
That's right.
And it's called Publish, Market, and Publicize Your Book.
Right, and there's three of us that we've known each other for a long time. So it's myself, Linda L. Richards, David Middleton, who is also part of January Magazine, and Marie Baker, who's the debt-free graduate, Canada's leading student financial expert.
Uh-huh.
And the three of us have, you know, we talk to people know when they know what we do, they want to talk to us about books, and increasingly people are picking our brains about all of this stuff, of which we do have a great deal of knowledge. So we're sitting around one day and we said, you know what, we've got to put all of this together into a powerful day, and do it through a seminar and talk to a bunch of people at once, because a lot of people are so interested about this now. And there's so much that we know. I mean, you accumulate things as you go along. I myself am the author of a dozen books, mm-hmm. both fiction and nonfiction, all traditionally published, most recently also e-books. Mm-hmm. I've published my backlist electronically, and I'm doing super well with them.
Now, I guess, you know, when I think about the publishing market, and we've covered it a little bit in the past, we followed the journey of a self-publisher who went through the whole iUniverse route of publishing her book and getting it into chapters and that sort of stuff. But it's always been a market fraught with challenge for authors. They have a good idea, and who knows whether or not, I mean, it's almost whether or not they actually have a good product is so far down the line of the criteria of whether or not they actually get published and are successful. We know that lots of wonderfully written pieces never see the light of day. Is the internet changing that? Is it easier now for people who have a good idea and are good writers to publish?
Is it easier? I mean, maybe I would say it's different. It's certainly, I keep thinking about what happened with music when the iPod first mm-hmm. appeared. And everything has changed so much, right, to the music industry. But it hasn't all been bad. Mm-hmm. Like, the playing field got leveled a little bit. I think we're seeing that. The gatekeepers are changing. There's different people at those gates. And the existing gatekeepers are kind of confused, right, mm-hmm. in terms of traditional publishing. They're not sure where this is going to end.
They're losing their power.
Pardon?
They're losing their power. That's the challenge.
And it's altering. I'm afraid to be too hard and fast, because it's a changing platform. But there are things happening. There are people being incredibly successful. But we're going to talk. We're going to be talking also about traditional publishing. And I don't think there's one answer that's right for everyone. You know, how do you talk to an agent? And how do you find those people? And people, there are people who still want to know that. And that there are people for whom that is the correct answer, to go traditionally. You don't want to start out maybe self-publishing, or maybe you do. It really depends on the project, and it depends on your the way you're geared.
Now, I might be naive, but I see two reasons that people publish books. The first reason is they want to make money off telling their story, and they're a performer. As such. The second reason is they want to raise their brand level. They want to use the book to create credibility for themselves and to create a new opportunity in the marketplace. Am I missing something, or does the publishing world break down into those two areas?
I think that's untrue. I think there might be more. I think sometimes people have, you know, they've developed a certain level of expertise in their industry or in their area of passion, mm-hmm. and they want to share that, and well, they should, you know, or if it's within their power to do so, they have a story they want to tell.
Now,
I can't tell you how many, you know, parties I've been at, and people have said, "Oh, you're a novelist. You know, you could tell this story of mine, and then, you know, we would have this incredible bestseller because it's such a good story." And I want to say I've got lots of ideas of my own. How are you going to tell that story?
Yeah, there's you know, that's, I have the same issue at parties where people tell me that of great ideas for TV shows. And I keep telling them, I don't care if it's a great idea or not. Who's going to pay for it? I mean,
right.
The TV market, it's simple. If somebody's got a budget to pay for it, as the Housewives of Vancouver show, if somebody's willing to pay for it, it'll get on the air. And if somebody's not willing to pay for it, it doesn't get on the air. It doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. I hope that's not the case in the book publishing market.
What do you mean?
That as long as somebody's willing to pay for it, it's going to get there.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are elements of that, I guess.
So
you mean by taking a bad idea all the way by having enough money to throw at a project?
Yeah, or the reputation or what have you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. But that's always been the case. That's not new.
Yeah, I guess not. Okay, so Steve Dotto, I do blogging. I write. If I come to your seminar, what am I going to learn?
First, you can give me your autograph. what are you going to learn? You're going to learn because you're going to come with your own ideas. You've thought about, because you're there, you've thought about taking some creating a book.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to give you some tools to think through what that book project might look like. So there's going to be an element of workshop, even if some of that work is going to be stuff you do on your own at some future point. But because lots of people in the world, lots of different types of books. So should it be, we're going to help you think through, should it be traditionally published? Should you maybe be self-publishing it? Should it be an e-book and electronic only? You know, there's projects that's going to be. We're going to help you go through thinking through about publicizing a book when you do it, when it does happen. You're going to learn something about creating cover or thinking about those physical aspects that are even necessary with an electronic book, the physical aspects of book. I don't think covers have ever been more important than they are on an e-book.
Oh, yeah, because people, that's all they see. They're just scrolling through lists.
That's right. They can't pick it up and smell it. They just can look at the cover. So we're going to be thinking about those things as well.
Now, what about these services that we now see springing up from Amazon and those sort of, like the iUniverse service, where they are actually packaging up a lot of what you're talking about into basically a system that people go to for publishing their books. Are you a fan of that? Do you think that that's a game changer? Is it something that people need to enter with great trepidation?
I don't think it's necessarily a game changer. I mean, it does lower the barrier to some aspects, but still, there's nobody that does everything for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have some decisions to make in terms of processing your material. What defines book? At what point does it become book? We're even thinking about those kind of slightly philosophical issues like that. And of the services you do give up, you know, And we're not going to be talking specifically, I don't think, about services, except for maybe we're doing a question-answer period, so that might come up.
Probably, yeah.
But I'm loath to endorse one over the other, especially so early in the game. But Murray, who's one of our speakers, Murray Baker, he started out with a book that was published traditionally by HarperCollins, and it was a huge seller. And then later editions, he reverted the rights, which is something we'll talk about as well. But he has been self-publishing it, I think, for like 10 years and has done incredibly well with it. And he does the whole thing traditionally. He hires a designer who does the changes every year. He set up his own distribution network, and distribution is always key.
Yeah.
And he sold, I'm going to pluck a figure out of the air. It's like 200,000 or 250,000 copies. This is a Canadian published book, all right?
Wow.
That he sells directly, in part directly to universities, and he's a speaker. So I mean, there's all kinds of there's not one right answer.
So the seminar is something that costs money. I don't have the exact.
Oh yes,
here.
It does.
How much does it cost to go?
Here
it is. How much does it? Here it is. I'll click on the registration link on the website. The website is publishingsuccessnetwork.com. We'll also have this posted on the DottoTech site, of course. But there you can register. I think it's like $200 and some odd, isn't it?
Right. And there will be an advance. There's an advance until May 17th. You can register, and it's $157. And those prices include taxes. There's some event fees on top of that, another $10 or something, but we're including tax.
It's at the BCIT downtown campus, May 26th, the one-day publishing seminar. Publish, market, and publicize your book. Linda Richards, my guest. Thanks so much, Linda. Good luck with the seminar. Maybe I'll find some time and come and find my muse.
How awesome would that be? We would love that.
Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
A reminder to drop by to visit our website. The address, as we've mentioned, DottoTech.com. There we have podcasts and recordings of each and every one of these episodes. And
pictures.
I'm going to have the picture of the HDR picture, of the high dynamic range image. We've given away a sling box. We've actually given it away already, but the winner's there. There's some Tony from Cambridge, Ontario won it. We had like 1,700 entries. We had a great,
holy moly, entries.
Everybody wants a sling box.
Was it Tony 1,700 times?
No, Tony didn't enter 1,700 times. There was no art factors, but I understand you've weaseled your way into a different access of a sling box.
Well, Paul and I last week, we had a mandate.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you?
We talked about business. We talked about, I found out about Paul's life. You didn't sell him as well to me as you should have, because he has a very interesting life, Steve.
In what way?
I can't tell you. It's not something I can't divulge. I spent an entire evening with him discussing it. Think I'm going to tell you everything?
Oh, so is there a bromance going on between you two now?
I wouldn't go that far, but definitely there was some flirting going on. Not going to say who.
Especially when he offered to lend you a sling box.
Well, and that's...
See, I don't know if you should lend sling boxes. They might get contaminated by his IT.
It's okay. It's no worries.
Okay. So you're going to be trying to... No, why... You're not going to use the sling box... Just a minute now. He's not going to set up the sling box at his house. Art's going to take the sling box to his dad's.
Yeah, that's
He's
right.
He's going to set it up at his dad's, and his dad's not even going to know. And then Art's going to be taking
piggybacking
on his dad's on
cable.
His dad's cable.
And I'm going to get the administrator password, so I don't want to watch what they get. I can watch it kick him off, right? Yeah, so
are you going to do that, Art? Are you going to set it up at your folks' place?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
what are you going to tell your dad when you do that?
He won't know. He's not the most technically sound person.
Yeah, but he's
going to
see you take a big box, plug it into his cable. He's going to say, "Art, what are you doing?"
Nothing a bottle of wine can't win over.
Deal with, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Deal with.
See, Art produces the Food and Wine Show as well, so he gets all these extra
samples.
Bottles of wine. He doesn't bring any into
samples.
The show here, but
because I know, I think that if you got any further inebriated than you are now. The show won't happen, so okay. I know I've got to keep you
just,
at a certain level.
Just so that people understand, I do not drink when I'm doing the show. I have a bottle of water, and that is it. But I should finish off telling people about what's happening at the website. We've got these new videos that I want people to check out. I'm doing these little how-to videos. And we've got basic introduction to Twitter. We've got sharing large files in Dropbox, Rogers One number. And also, really useful, how to deactivate your Facebook profile. Because a lot of people don't know how to do that. Deactivate it without actually deleting everything. Because you never know that you might if you might want to go back. Some people want to just disengage for a short time from Facebook.
I think people are getting to that now. People are... I think they there's a point where people are switching over to things like Twitter and Instagram or just tired of Facebook because it's just too much.
Yeah,
it
does.
They just want to sort of go away. But then, you know, a year later, 6 months later, a few months later, maybe they want to check up on.
And you've also got a lot of stuff in the Facebook account that maybe you don't want to get rid of. It's like a photo album. It's like a memory. And so
does this park it, like to put it in vacation mode?
Yeah, you could do that. You can just deactivate it and then you can come back and you can reactivate it. You have to use the same logon and all the same email. But, I show you it in the video. Watch the video.
Yeah, there you go. I will.
Watch the video.
We haven't got to that one yet.
It is free. We don't charge people for anything on our site.
I didn't mean monetarily free.
Oh, okay. I don't just give the information away.
That's right.
Fair enough. At any rate, so we've given away the Slingbox. That's on the site. It's great. Visit dottotech.com. Make me happy.
MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Rick Yeager joins me online, as he does most every week. He is my Mac expert. Rick, what's hanging?
What's hanging?
I don't know. I don't know.
I
was trying to act cool.
Okay, let's not answer that question. It's going well, though. How are you?
Good. So I gave you an assignment. I was playing with Instagram a little bit more because it's worth $1 billion. I had to figure it out. And so I said, let's talk photo apps on the iPhone because playing with Instagram, I was thinking, okay, I don't see the $1 billion, but I get it kind of. But I wonder what other photo apps there are that we should be looking at on the old iPhone.
Yeah, Instagram is more about the sharing aspect than the actual photography. But there are a lot of photo apps for the iPhone. My favorite and the favorite of a photographer friend of mine is Camera Plus by Tap Tap Tap. And it's so good that if you go searching for it, you'll find all kinds of other apps that are sort of named Camera Plus because this is camera and the plus symbol.
Oh, okay.
And then there's Camera Plus. Mm-hmm. So make sure you get Camera Plus from Tap Tap Tap. It's 99 cents right now. It's on sale. And it offers you all kinds of control. There's touch exposure and focus. There's a built-in stabilizer, timer, and it even takes pictures in burst mode so that you can take a whole bunch of pictures right after each other.
Okay.
Which is really handy. And it has a built-in flashlight.
Okay.
I spoke before about how most iOS developers seem to make clock apps. The other thing they like to make is flashlight apps because all they have to do is make the screen go white, and that serves as a flashlight light. But in this case, with the iPhone having a front-facing camera, it actually serves to take better macro shots because you're lighting things that are very close to the lens. And it actually serves a purpose in this case.
Okay.
It does the usual crazy filters. Some of them are in-app purchases and allows you to crop the photos, add borders and filters and different little processing features in there. And, of course, the obligatory sharing through Facebook, Twitter, and Flickr.
Okay.
So that is a great... standalone camera app replacement extraordinaire. Have you ever used that one?
No, I haven't.
It was actually developed by, at least in concert with a local photographer, Lisa Bettany.
Okay.
And it shot to the top of the best-selling apps list soon after it was released because they had this interesting idea of using the volume button as the shutter.
Okay.
And then Apple took it off the App Store because that was not allowed, and then promptly added that feature to its own camera app.
Oh. That's unfair.
That's unfair. But it's still one of, if not the most popular camera app you can buy on the App Store.
There it is, and it's only 99 cents. Now, does it have any sharing features built in?
Yes, it it does allow you to share to Facebook and Twitter and Flickr.
Okay.
Another one I wanted to tell you about is Pro HDR. Are you familiar with HDR at all?
Nope.
HDR stands for High Dynamic Range. This app is made by iApps, and it's just under $2. What high dynamic range is, basically, it disproves the theory that two wrongs don't make a right, because it takes an overexposed image and an underexposed image and takes the best of both of them and makes a combined image that has more detail, more color, more vibrancy than you could get out of a single image.
Oh, so it brackets.
It brackets in, I mean, the iPhone's camera app purports to have HDR built in. It's one of the settings. But it doesn't do HDR justice the way this one does.
Okay.
I've become obsessed with these kind of pictures. If my fiance makes the most beautiful food, it tastes wonderful and it looks great, and I've become one of those people that takes food pictures.
Oh.
And I use this app on my phone every time, because it just gets all the details, all of the sizzling, every morsel of flavory goodness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's amazing in backlit situations where another camera would just fail miserably. It actually takes a beautiful shot.
By bracketing, overexposing and underexposing the photo, then blending the two into something that's better than real life.
Better than real life is the perfect explanation. It's got a timer. It's got geotagging, allows you to crop. It has the same filters that you'd find in Instagram, borders. It allows you to add text, and then again sharing via email, Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, Tumblr, and it can even just save it to your clipboard.
Excellent. Okay.
The next one I wanted to share with you is 100 cameras in one by stuckincustoms.com. It's actually developed by Trey Ratcliffe, who is another HDR fanatic. It's $199, and if you like filters, this is the app for you. This app has more categories for filters than other apps have filters.
This is the thing that Instagram has that I just don't get. I don't get the filters. I want to see the picture of what I saw, not all this filtered stuff. So this probably isn't the one for me, but
no.
Tell me why I want all these filters.
Filters are great if you can't take decent pictures.
Oh, okay.
If you can take a decent picture, you don't need filters.
Okay.
But somebody's going to send me a nasty email about that. But I find a lot of these filtery apps that add grunge and add strange colors and things. I look at the subject matter of the photo, and without the filter, it's totally uninteresting. So this app, like its name suggests, has hundreds and hundreds of filters. You can layer filters one on top of each other, and it actually makes a game of it. It's actually linked to Game Center.
Oh.
So you can, it awards you achievements based on what you do with the photos and how you share them. And yeah, it shares Twitter, Facebook, Flickr, Smug Mug, Dropbox, and Instagram.
Okay.
So there's no limit to the social sharing of photographs.
And they've gamified it.
And they've gamified it, which was very interesting. I mean, if that hooks you, that'll get you on this app.
Okay.
And the last one I wanted to show you was ToonPaint.
ToonPaint.
ToonPaint is by ToonFX. also $199, and it speaks to me because several years ago I came up with a long convoluted Photoshop tutorial that allowed you to turn your photographs into comic book style images, and it was hugely popular. It's still on my website, and now you can do all of it quickly and easily and actually better than my tutorial would have done right in your iPhone. It's $2.
$2.
$2. You adjust the edges, the black and gray levels, to create ink lines that look just like they were painted by a skilled artist. And then you move over into the paint mode, and you can color your creation with finger paints, or use one of its kind of quickie palette filters to saturate the natural colors in the image. And then when you're done, you can share it on Facebook, Twitter, and email.
Wow. And you now, is this an iPhone, or is this also an iPad app? It seems to me it'd be better on the iPad.
I've always used it on the iPhone. The last I checked, it was only on the iPhone, but I could be wrong. I should check into that. But
That one looks like fun. I might try that one.
It's addictive fun because you end up going through your whole camera roll and oh, what would this one look like? And play around with those.
Yeah, that would be fun. I can see that. That one's useful. Well played, sir.
Thank you.
And Rick Jaeger.
And then you can just send those cartoony photos right on into Instagram, and people wondering how you did that. How'd you get that? That filter's not
that
my
filter?
Instagram.
Is that a filter? Okay. Rick Jaeger is the app man at appman.tv. He's also our Mac expert. Thanks for your time, Rick.
Thank you, Steve.
Mac Tech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation. Who said business and pleasure don't mix? You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Nikki Castengay joins us now. She is the production manager at London Drugs. You might recognize that she was on with us last week, and she's going to be on with us next week, too. Why? Because May is what, Nikki?
Photo month.
May is photo month, and you are in charge of all the photos being published. How many photos do you develop a day?
Oh, it really depends on which store you're at, but I mean, it's obviously thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
Absolutely.
And thousands. So London Drugs has photo finishing, of course, but they also do all of these different, just printing off a photo now is so yesterday. Now you have to make it into something better, and we're going to talk about photo books today.
Yes.
Now, I like the idea of photo books for a couple of reasons. One is, when we think about archiving photos and saving our pictures and backing them up, I think books are a great way to go because, and we never talk about this much, but because the book being closed keeps air off of the photos.
Absolutely, which stops the damage.
Yeah, so if you think about, you get photos that fade over time, regardless of how well you store them, they tend to fade. But in books, you open the book and the color's still great. And then why is that? Because there's no air getting to those photos. They're actually protected.
And a lot of times no moisture as well.
Yeah, yeah, unless you store it in your garage and then it floods or something like that. So that could be an error. So talk to me about the thought process people go through in the planning process in photo books. Because the photo books range everything from little six-inch books all the way up to full-size, huge coffee table books.
Yes. Really what you want to start with is which pictures you want to use. Are you doing somebody's life? Are you doing just a specific trip? Put that all into one folder on your computer, start up our software, bring up those pictures, and then you can just tell the software which book you want to do. We start at, as you were saying, the 6x7 soft cover book. We go all the way up to 12x12 custom hardcover books. Let me explain what custom hardcover is. That is an actual design that you have done, whether it's one picture strewn across the actual spine itself, or you can go to something more traditional, a black leather album, a white leather album.
So, you mentioned something I think is important to consider as you plan your photos is figuring out what the theme of your photo is. If it's somebody's life, if it's a trip, but having a designated theme to these photo books. It's not just a collection of your photos the way that they... I guess you could.
But. You really could. We actually have proof books. We have two different sizes of proof books.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you just have a bunch of media with pictures on it, you can make a proof book. It will do anywhere from 3 up to, I believe it's about 16 images per page.
Okay.
It'll designate the number of the actual image. So if you say, oh, that's one of the ones I want, it's very easy for you to go back.
Okay. Now, and for the, you know, the smaller books and stuff like that, for events, like if your kids are in a theater, you know, in a play, you can take a whole bunch of pictures of the play, and then you could make them as gifts, as mementos for the people that are part of the show and stuff like that. So there's some really creative ways that you can
use photo books. We have grad classes doing that right now.
Grad classes, that'd be perfect, yeah.
Yeah, it's been the whole grad year, just the functions that they've done together. And they do one up, and everybody just goes ahead and orders them.
Art showed me his. He did his for his bowling team. It was awesome. They did 4 copies for the bowling team, but they went big. They went to the full coffee table board.
It's a brilliant idea. You can do it for a slow pitch team, a soccer team, a football team.
Yeah. The other team wasn't very good. Bowling team. It wasn't a very good bowling team, but he did it. It was really nice. And he did it for all the guys. So I thought
it was very sweet.
It was sweet. Now, you've got software that will help, so you can play with it. I think one of the things that you want to do is you want to take your time. This is not a project you want to rush into. You want to take your time. Do it properly.
And put the pictures in there that you really want. Absolutely. We do believe in taking your time. And if you find that you don't have the time, London Drugs does offer a design service. So if you just bring your images into us, we'll create the book for you.
And is that, I mean, I always wonder about, you know, how you decide which picture is going to be small, which picture is going to be large, which picture, you know, how you're going to tell a story as you go through. Are your designers able to do that? Do they know which pictures are going to fit best? Or is it just pretty much... just importing them and they automatically kind of flow through?
They automatically flow through. We go through, we decide, you know what, that picture itself is too pixelated. Let's try a different picture see if it looks a little bit better.
Because you can take a larger picture and then make it smaller.
Definitely.
And then you can kind of recycle that picture and still get some use out of it if it's...
Definitely. And our software down at the very bottom shows a check mark for the pictures you've actually used.
Okay.
So that you'll know, oh, okay, well, I've used these 4 pictures, but I haven't used these 3.
What's the baseline resolution that you expect people to have for their photos for printing in this quality?
It depends on what size book you're going with. Because if you're going with a 6x7 book and you're putting on 9 images per page, really...
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Okay, you only need a 1x1.
Okay, let's say, what is the maximum resolution? What's the minimum resolution for the maximum size photo?
You really want to go with a 3x3 at 200 DPI. So you want a 600x600 image would probably be around the minimum.
Okay.
We're still going to do our color and density correction to try and make sure it looks as great as it possibly can. Now, our photographic albums, we do print at 720 DPI. So you do want to have just that little bit better of image, because otherwise it will start to break down on you.
Now, when you've color corrected my images... Mm-hmm. Do I get those images back in digital form as well, color corrected, or are they just printed?
No, they're just printed in the photo book.
That's a good question, Steve.
That is a good question.
That's something you should think about doing.
Something we do is, going back to archival, it's a service that we do offer. If you are getting all of your digital images put onto CD, you can pay for us to have them color and density corrected and rotated.
Well, that's what we're going to be talking about for next week, though.
Yep.
We're talking about archiving your photos next week because it's still photo month.
Yes, here. Absolutely.
Now, so your courses are still going on. This week's course was actually on photo books, but the course this week is on I have it here, greeting cards.
Yes.
And then next week you're doing a course on calendars.
Yes.
Again, all different things that can be printed off. And Nikki Casting, I thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to you next week as photo month continues here on DottoTech. Paul DeMera has been sitting in the co-pilot seat for the show today. Paul, I want to talk to you about BlackBerry World, which just happened a week ago down in the States. It was an important event for RIM. It was the first time they were... it was the first real major event for their new president and CEO, the first time since they've kind of gone
Thorsten,
through their big catharsis. So what's the feedback? What are we hearing about it?
I think most people are still waiting for... the final product, if you want to call it that. They've had a chance to take a look at what the latest operating system does on the BlackBerry Playbook. They were given a taste of what the new BlackBerry 10 software is going to look like on new devices.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see the final product of a new device, but all the developers were actually given a device that when they signed up. So obviously they want to keep a few secrets for the day when they do launch everything. I think everybody's mildly excited, a little bit of, I don't know, trepidation. There's a number of different things that come to mind. they're not 100% sure of where this is going because so much time has gone by and so many other players in the market have done very well. And RIM is, you know, with its 77 million customers, sounds like a lot. But you take a look at the Apples of the world and Samsungs and LGs and et cetera. And it's a changing world for everybody in the smartphone game. So.
And you just wonder how many, you know, just how many let rats are going to be left on the ship right now.
Agreed, yeah. I'm still pretty personally bullish because I get what QNX is all about, their operating system. The challenge is to get something like this built and up and running. Unlike Apple, who did things in parallel, you know, when Apple switched from one processor family to the other, they were writing two types of code and they compiled it and it was all nice and simple. So we just jumped one day. RIM, you've kind of got product that's sort of legacy now, you know, the older operating system with the keypad. And now you're going to BlackBerry 10, which you've seen on the playbook, but nobody really knows what it's going to look like on the device. And, you know, some of the tidbits that they did produce look really neat. Like, for instance, when you take a photograph, you have this time machine capability. So if someone blinks, you can actually push your finger on it and go back a half second and get rid of the person blinking and it fixes the picture. Stuff like that. There's no buttons on it as well. Everything's all
swiping. So the BlackBerry 10 is going to be a screen phone.
It's yes.
No
keyboard at all.
Is that causing much consternation? Because when I still think about the BlackBerry, I still think, you know, if I ever have a job that I absolutely am writing a ton of emails on my phone, I'm just gonna whip out the old BlackBerry.
Yep.
Because there's no way I can write effectively on my iPhone or on my Samsung or on any of my full screen phones. I don't like it. I like writing on my BlackBerry. I was almost as fast on my BlackBerry as I was on a keyboard.
Well, you know, if you've watched videos of people typing on touchscreens, you recognize that you can learn to type as fast on a touchscreen as a BlackBerry. I originally started in 1999 with the BlackBerry 950, the first one they ever came out with, and so I became a keyboard junkie. A couple years ago, I started to use devices with soft keypads, and the one thing I had to learn, and it's a mental leap. With a BlackBerry, you actually push the button and you feel a click, so there's a tactile response from the device, right? Yep. And you can kind of tell you've pushed the button. You don't get that from a touchscreen. You get, you know, depending on if it's Android or Apple, you get a sound or a vibration or whatever, but it's not the same experience. And same thing with you're on a keyboard on a computer. You get that tactile feel. But you can overcome it. It just takes a while. And it took me about 3 weeks before I really got going on a virtual keyboard. Now that I'm on a virtual keyboard and I can turn it sideways or portrait, you know, whatever I want to type in, I found it more appealing than using a keyboard. Because I go back to a BlackBerry and go, but it takes, I agree, it's a hard thing for people.
But here's,
we're talking 10 years, right,
here's
for me.
Here's a problem that I have with the Apple one, and this is what I wonder if you might not know this about what's happening with BlackBerry, but on Android, using Swipe,
yes,
I was getting good.
Yes.
Right? Now, Swipe, for those of you who are listening, is instead of reaching out and touching each key,
you just slide your
finger around in to each key, kind of like a puzzle, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it recognizes the motions and it fills the words in, and it's a very fast, you can get really fast typing that way.
So the folks at RIM have taken a slightly different approach. They have a trainable keyboard. In other words, it starts to understand how you behave and where you're putting your fingers, and it actually puts words up above the keys. So as you're typing, if you watch the video on BlackBerry World, you can see how this is done. It looks really impressive. I haven't tried it per se, but it looks like it actually helps you speed up your typing because when you hit the first couple of letters, it kind of knows what the sentence is.
It autofills the word.
Well, it doesn't autofill. It actually gives you a choice, and you can just slide your finger up to get those words.
Or you just tap on the words, and then it fills
them. You actually slide up your finger. It's kind of that swipe thinking, but a little bit different sort of spin on it. It looks really cool. I have to try it to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's going to be a different process because you're going to have to be reading, not just looking at the letters on the keyboard, but you're going to have to be monitoring text above. Because I think it's crucial for RIM to be an effective communication platform to be good at email.
Absolutely.
That is their raison d'etre. And that, you know, everything else, the iPhone does better. And that's where, you know, they're going to have to get back to that. And we get a sense that they aren't really introducing an awful lot new, are they?
I think you're going to see some evolutionary features. I think you're going to also see some innovation in some areas, like this keyboard and the way it works. The QNX operating system also allows you to run Android apps. It's got a player for Android, so it gives them some flexibility into a wider variety of apps in an ecosystem, and that's all really important too. So they
can run the full suite of Android apps?
Well, they have to be slightly changed. They have to be, I think it's recompiled slightly to be able to run on the BlackBerry. But it's very, very easy for a developer to run it through the scrubber, the device that or the software that would actually make the application run. And they don't have to recompile it. They just have to basically put it through this piece of software that allows it to run on the BlackBerry under the QNX operating system. So that gives them a big ecosystem, right?
And so is RIM's online store going to be
filled up with this stuff? Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen.
And is it
it's already started with the playbook.
Okay. And yeah. That's going to be crucial for it.
Absolutely. You know, you got, what, 500,000 plus apps on the App Store for Apple, and that's sort of the benchmark now. A device without an ecosystem is not going to do well in the marketplace. People want apps. People get bored. They're looking for new stuff to play with. And if you don't have the suite of apps to go with a fancy, you know, sexy device that's shiny, it's not going to happen. So,
and even though there's so many apps now on the App Store, the Apple App Store, that nobody could ever use them, it's just the perception that it's all there. And, you know, surprisingly, there's a lot of things that are just available in Android still that are
Absolutely.
Not on the iPhone.
True enough.
I mean, this keyboard swipe thing is a prime example of something that's not available on the iPhone.
The one thing I recognize, and I like to follow all these trends because it's a genuine interest of mine, is the whole smartphone world is changing quite dramatically. And screen size, virtual keyboards, you know, high-resolution displays, all that stuff is part of the evolution of screens in front of people, right? Because we all going to start seeing more screens as we move forward in time. And your smartphone is going to be the most used screen, if you think about it, because you always have it with you, right?
Yeah.
But the whole mentality of how we do things is changing dramatically because we're in the information revolution. So RIM has to figure out a secret sauce for their device, and Apple has their secret sauce, and the Android world has their secret sauce. And it's going to be a multi-horse race for a little while still, I think. So
we can tell that RIM is still very much dedicated to the providing a hardware platform.
Yes.
Delivering that. That was one of the breaking points with the previous regime.
You know, what's funny is they actually were doing cloud computing before everybody started talking about cloud computing, because the RIM NOC is actually a cloud-based system that's out there on the internet that your device talks to. And that's what it does, right? But they called it the RIM NOC, you know, Network Operations Center, but now they're starting to adapt. You know, if you watch the keynote, this is a cloud-based, and it has been since 1999, right? So they get that too. It's just when it breaks, which happened to them, they had a little outage there a while back, and people started to take notice, and they have to be mindful of those things, right?
Now, Thorsten Heinz was his first big public event.
I think he did reasonably well.
His keynote's online. You can have a listen to see it. He's not unbelievably charismatic, but
no, but he seems sincere.
He's got to come across as competent.
Yeah, competent and sincere. I think he genuinely believes that the folks at RIM are laser focused on trying to make this right. They recognize they have to catch up, and sometimes that's when people do their best work, right? When they don't think they're in first place, they realize, hey, we're no longer in first place, so we're going to have to push it, right? And Apple did the same thing in the late 90s. So
here's
it can happen.
Here's my problem, and I hope that RIM does turn it around, but here's where I have a disconnect. RIM was an innovative company that basically pioneered new areas for us.
They did.
Wireless email was their baby.
Push wireless email.
Push wireless email.
Not pull, you have to push a button to get it. Push.
Yeah, they made that a reality. They made it, and they did it. They did so brilliantly, and they got security.
Yes,
secure email, and they developed huge market share as a result.
Exactly.
The world changed, and all of a sudden, the iPhone and the Android became acceptable in that area, and now they are both dwarfing RIM. RIM, unless they can figure out some place to pioneer again and provide leadership, I don't know how they're going to catch up in this world, because let's face it, if you say to any Joe Blow, I'm going to give you this BlackBerry, or I'm going to give you this iPhone, or I'm going to give you this Samsung Note, BlackBerry's third.
Exactly.
It's going to be third. And no matter how good a product they make,
you're right,
it's going to be third.
So this whole ecosystem and device that comes out this fall has to be absolutely magical, or else it's it's probably going to sell, but it's not going to go crazy. You know, it's not going to go viral.
They're becoming Nokia.
Yes, exactly. Nokia has had the same challenge. They were number one and have dwindled back to what, third, fourth place now.
They're an afterthought. Yeah. Who has? Do you know anybody that uses a Nokia phone? Art, do you know anybody that uses a Nokia? You used to.
Yeah, that was a while ago, though. I still see them, but I also see them pushing walkers, so maybe
so too soon. It's very fickle in the tech world. If you're not on top of things and don't stay in front of everybody, you know, it's going to happen. It happened to Apple, and you know, we see it happen to Nokia. We've seen it happen to RIM. You need to recognize what people are interested in, understand the trends, and get there first. And that's what Apple and Samsung and the folks at Google have done with Android. They know what people are looking for, and they're delivering that to them quickly.
I wonder if when we look back, if Lazarus and those guys weren't right with the idea that RIM should become a software company and become like IBM, be a service company, get out of the hardware, and you know,
maybe you know, that's not a bad thought, because from a business perspective, people are looking to cut costs, simplify things, make it reliable, simple, all that good stuff. So maybe that is part of where they need to go. Who knows?
It'll be interesting to watch. I need to thank all of our guests. We have run out of time. Paul DeMera,
thanks so much, Steve, as always,
for coming in. Art Factor, where are you performing this week?
Not this week, but keep in your calendar, June 23rd at the Rio Theater.
Okay.
The world famous Rio Theater.
Rio.
On Broadway.
This week, I'm speaking to the British Columbia Insurance Institute at in Kelowna. I'm heading up to Kelowna.
Very nice.
Okanagan Grand, baby.
That's the ticket.
That's
where I was born. Yeah.
That's a nice hotel up there. I'm looking forward to going up there, and I might even do a little bit of fishing on the trip. Tune in for us again next week here on Dottotech. Remember, drop by the website www.dottotech.com. There you can listen to this podcast, listen to previous episodes, drop us a note, watch our videos, and we will see you next week right here.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.